The debate over agricultural methane is raging. Cow burps and cow methane are in the eye of the storm. Dr. Robert Haworth of Cornell University says teasing the global warming potential of agricultural methane out of the global warming equation as less potent doesn't matter because, as he says, methane is methane. Haworth, however, acknowledges that cow-produced methane is not the big culprit in global warming potential. It is, according to him, by far and away the fossil fuel industry, and in particular the production of shale gas that is of the greatest concern. The reason Haworth says that shale gas-produced methane is a more potent greenhouse gas is because of the carbon isotope within it. Haworth says if you look at CO2 from fossil fuels and from most methane, the C12 isotope is present. Whereas in shale gas, the larger C13 isotope is also present, and it has different GHG impacts. That said, Haworth agrees with Dr. Miles Allen of Oxford University, who says the traditional way of accounting for methane emissions from cows overstates the impact of a steady herd by a factor of 4. And those errors distort cows' contributions, both good and bad, and in doing so give fossil fuel CO2 producers a free pass on their total GHG contribution. We invited Dr. Robert Haworth of Cornell University to join us for a conversation that matters about digging deeper into understanding the complex world of methane. Professor Haworth, welcome to Conversations That Matter. Thank you for joining me. You have spent a good portion of your career focused on CH4 methane, especially that from the production that comes from the natural resources sector. Let's first of all talk about how potent a greenhouse gas CH4 is.
Well, for the time methane is in the atmosphere, it's more than 100 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than as carbon dioxide. It's responsible for, if we look at the global warming that's occurred over the last 30, 40, 50 years, 25% of that has come from methane, with carbon dioxide being most of the rest of that. If you look at the methane that's released globally today from human activity, all sources, agriculture, sewage treatment, as well as the oil and gas industry, and you compare that with the carbon dioxide that's emitted today from human activity, they are more or less equal in their influence on global warming for the time period of the next 10 years.
So even though we're burning less natural gas, it's equal in its contribution?
The methane, and again, that's all methane from all human sources,
right?
On the time scale of 10 years. Time scale is really important here because methane is an amazingly potent greenhouse gas, but it only stays in the atmosphere with a half-life of about 12 years. So in 24 years, three-quarters of it's gone. In 36 years, you know, 88% of it's gone, et cetera. When we put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, it's going to have a climatic influence for centuries, maybe 1,000 years into the future. So the time scale at which we compare them becomes really critical. But if we look at the next decade, the emissions of the two gases we're putting in the atmosphere today are roughly equal in terms of the warming they're going to be causing over the next 10 years. You know, 20 years out, 30 years out, 40 years out, you know, that methane will be gone and the carbon dioxide is still with us. So many climate scientists will tell you that the carbon dioxide is more important, and they're right if you take that really long-term view. But if you're also concerned about our current rate of warming and where we are at the moment in terms of climate disruption, you have to pay attention to methane as well.
Just a point, because I don't quite understand this. So at once methane dissipates or is no longer in that heavy concentration known as CH4, are we still not left with a carbon molecule that's still in the atmosphere post its life as methane?
Yeah, absolutely. When the methane is gone, it's being oxidized, and it's going to carbon dioxide, and it's going to water vapor in equal amounts for the hydrogens, and the carbon's all going to carbon dioxide. And a lot of that happens in the upper atmosphere, in the stratosphere, which is important because it's becoming a source of water vapor in the stratosphere, which is part of the reason it's problematic. The water vapor in the stratosphere also contributes to global warming. So when it goes away, it's still contributing that way, but it also becomes carbon dioxide.
So methane will transcend through the troposphere, the tropopause, and into the stratosphere?
Yes, it's diffusing, if you will, for lack of a better term, slowly over the stratosphere. And that's the principal fate of methane in the atmosphere. Once it diffuses into the stratosphere, it's pretty quickly oxidized.
But into water vapor, which, as I understand, water vapor in the stratosphere is a very potent greenhouse gas.
That's correct. That's one of the concerns with methane. Methane itself, while it's methane in the atmosphere, is a potent greenhouse gas in its own right, but it also is contributing water vapor to the stratosphere. It affects the residence times of ground level ozone, which is another greenhouse gas that prolongs the amount of ozone we have at ground level. So it's doing other things to contribute to warming as well. About half of the warming capacity of methane is directly in the infrared absorbed into the methane molecule, and half are these other indirect effects.
How is it then that natural gas has been positioned as the greener fossil fuel?
To get the same amount of energy when you burn natural gas instead of coal, you do produce substantially less carbon dioxide. And that's where that idea that it's a clean bridge fuel comes from. But if you emit even a few percent of that natural gas as unburned methane into the atmosphere, it counteracts the effect.
You know, there was that massive leak in California, pouring, you know, so much methane into the atmosphere, and that was unburned. What's the difference between burned natural gas or methane versus unburned and its impact in the environment, in the atmosphere?
Well, when we burn natural gas, it becomes carbon dioxide, right? So, and then the methane is gone. So natural gas before you burn it is methane, and when you emit it, leak it, if you like, to the atmosphere, it's unburned. I should add just a little bit there. I say emit as opposed to just leakage. The accident in Los Angeles was a leak, but some of the natural gas operations routinely and purposefully put methane into the atmosphere as well, and I wouldn't call that a leak. If it's, you know, if it's happening as part of your design, it's not a leak.
Okay, help me understand this, and this is my, because I get confused about methane. So when I burn natural gas, in the act of burning it, I, in essence, am converting it into CO2?
And water vapor, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. So
that's what you're doing.
Is that better for the environment if I burn it and I'm just putting CO2 in? Because, as you pointed out, I'm getting a higher energy output when I burn natural gas versus when I burn coal. And so, therefore, the total amount of CO2 that I'm putting into the atmosphere is less.
That's correct. So you're burning natural gas instead of coal, you're putting less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But you're putting more methane into the atmosphere because of these emissions and leaks. There's a little bit of methane associated with coal as well, but, you know, methane is a contaminant, if you will, in coal. And so when you develop coal, there's some methane emissions. Mm-hmm. It's substantial, but nowhere near as much to get the same amount of energy as for natural gas, which makes sense if you think about it, because, again, you know, natural gas is 92-95% methane. That's what it is.
Yeah.
A few other gases, and it's mostly methane.
Yeah,
hard to use a gas without leaking and emitting some of it.
Right. Well, okay, let's shift a little bit to cows or large ruminants that, through the enteric, digestive process, they burp out methane. They're consuming, what I find interesting is the foods that they consume are carbon-based, but in their digestive process, they're converting it to methane. And there are, I've had conversations with people who go, if you take a look at the fact that this is just bile flow, and a herd size stays the same, the impact of cows burping isn't the same as saying, well, this is a natural gas or methane release. But you say, no, that's not accurate. How come?
Yeah, no, I disagree with that. And fundamentally, once you get the methane into the atmosphere, it has the same consequences no matter where it came from, right? Mm-hmm. And animal agriculture is a major contributor globally of methane fluxes. The herd sizes are much larger than they used to be, and also feeding practices, quite frankly. If we look at the cows and cattle in Africa, which are, you know, much more poorly fed, for lack of a better word, they don't put out anywhere near as much methane either. So it's, you know, part of the issue is we have big herds, lots of animals, they're burping, belching a lot of methane, as you say, and it's a lot more than was true when we had just natural ruminant population, say 100 years or so ago. So the, I mean, if you, actually, just as a, an aside, you know, one of the things I've been working on for the last couple of years, I published a paper in 2019, was what the major sources of methane are globally and how those have changed over the last 15 years. And I won't get into too much detail unless you want me to, but we can look at the details of the carbon chemistry in that methane molecule. Most of it's carbon-12, but some of it's carbon-13, a little heavier isotope, a little tiny bit of it's radioactive, carbon-14. And you can look at the time trends in those over time. And there were people who were saying, there are people still saying, that the big increase globally in methane emissions over the last 15 years, and they've been going up quickly, are from cows and increases in cow emissions. That didn't ring true to me, just because the herds aren't growing in that size. And the places where they are growing are in India and Africa, where they're not well fed and they're not producing as much methane anyway. So I took a quick, a close look and reanalyzed those global atmospheric data and concluded that really the big driver over the last 15 years was the natural gas industry. And what people had missed is that the methane coming from shale gas is slightly different than that from conventional natural gas. The abundance of that slightly heavier carbon-13 isotope is a little different. And so we're seeing a change in that abundance globally, which people were attributing to cows, I attributed to shale gas. So when you reanalyze that, assuming I'm correct, and of course not everyone thinks I'm right, but I would say that two-thirds of the increase in global methane over the last 15 years is coming from oil and gas, with about half of that, a third of the total, being shale gas development in the United States, a big part of it. And then cows are also increasing, but not to the same extent. And if you look at the total sources, not just the change over time, you know, I think the oil and gas industry is at least twice the problem that cows are. And again, not everyone agrees. There are people who say that cows are a bigger source than the natural gas industry, but I think that's wrong.
Well, when I talked to Professor Miles Allen from Oxford, he worried that the global warming potential equation that was extrapolated from the 2006 IPCC report that says that methane from cattle has this global warming potential, he said that the way that it has been represented is inaccurate and weighs too heavily on the side of the global warming potential of cows. And he said that when you maintain a herd size without increasing, or even if you're decreasing a little bit, that there is no net difference in greenhouse gas emissions from cattle. But I note that they're really talking about northern hemispheric herds, because as you pointed out, you go to other parts in the world. Well, we take a look at Brazil, where the size of the herd continues to expand, and largely because it's such a contributor to the leather industry. And it's more about leather than food. So I have a little bit of trouble trying to figure out just exactly, you know, what information is right. And Professor Allen is a highly respected climate scientist.
Well, absolutely. I have a great deal of respect for his climate science. It doesn't mean I always agree with him, however.
Right.
You know, as a sidetrack, you're right. The cattle populations in Brazil are going up rapidly. As far as I know, no one has ever measured what their methane composition is, what their burping is. This was rather little effort in Africa until just the last 5 or 6 years ago, not too much in India. Most of the data are centered around what we do in North America, principally United States and Alberta, and a fair amount in the Netherlands. You know, that's where the data is coming from. And then the climate scientists assume it's the same no matter where you are in the world, which I fundamentally, that's a wrong assumption. Where I disagree with Professor Miles is that it has to do with how we capture the comparison with carbon dioxide. And I'm pretty sure he would agree with me, I'm sure he would agree with me, that the methane itself, for the time it's in the atmosphere, has the same warming effect no matter where it comes from. The difference is that the, you know, the methane which is coming from cows originated in grass or corn or soybeans, whatever we're feeding them. That started as atmospheric carbon dioxide that was sucked out of the air in photosynthesis. And when it, when the methane finally is oxidized back to carbon dioxide, it's the same as the carbon dioxide that was taken up by those plants originally. Yes. Now, as I say, there is a component of having increased the water vapor in the stratosphere, which I think he underaccounted for. That's mm-hmm. part of it. But and the oil and gas industry is different, of course, because the methane has been trapped underground for tens, hundreds of millions of years, and it's a new component of carbon dioxide when it's oxidized. But, you know, that's a small correction to what the methane means. It's depending on what time frame you want to use and how you account for the global warming potential. He has a particular approach he calls GWP star, which some people are big fans of. I'm not, though. You know, I'm open to looking at some more. Usually people use something called the Global Warming Potential 100, which is just the comparison of methane to carbon dioxide for pulses of both gases put out one point in time and then integrated for 100 years into the future. I'm not a big fan of that either. I've been promoting what we call Global Warming Potential 20, which is similar to the 100, but it's integrating 20 years into the future because that's the time frame over which methane matters, and I'm concerned about global warming over the next 20 years. If we use a global warming potential 20, then where that carbon dioxide came from in the end increases the warming potential of methane from the natural gas industry by about 2.7% compared to cows. Trivial, right? So for all intents and purposes, we don't know the global warming potentials that well anyway, so it's a trivial difference. If you use a global warming potential 100, which tends to under account for methane anyway and weighs CO2 more heavily, then it ends up being about a 7.5% difference. And his use of global warming potential star, GWP star, he says it makes a bigger difference. You know, to me, it's a small thing, and for the most part, methane's methane.
So how then do we address methane issues related to cows if we consider the fact that cows are an integral part of the food supply?
Sure. You know, I've been getting attacked recently for having entered into this argument on Twitter, and people like to say that I'm a pawn of the oil and gas industry, which is ironic as hell. If you should see what the oil and gas industry has to say about me, but anyway,
yeah, I didn't read any of your online submissions that way.
You don't want to, but people also say, well, you know, of course I'm a vegetarian, so I'm just anti-beef or something. And that's not true, actually. I ate a steak over the weekend, and I like meat. Everything in moderation. I'm okay with it, right? But I do think we should pay attention to the size of the herds. I think we should do what we can to reduce methane emissions. And what you feed cows and cattle matter. You know, the rate at which you feed them, the type of feed matters. There's some literature on that. There should be more investigation. There's some recent suggestions that if you add a little bit of seaweed to the diet, relatively small amounts, it greatly cuts down on the methane. I mean, the bottom line is you describe where the methane's coming from their gut, but it's taking food. Their gut is an oxygen-free environment, and it's bacteria in their gut that are taking that organic matter, absent oxygen, and producing methane. And, you know, my PhD thesis was looking on that in wetland sediments. It's the same stuff, same idea. So the details of how those bacteria are living matters a lot, and the microenvironment around them matters. So I think there's a lot that could be done to reduce those methane emissions, and I get very frustrated when ranchers and farmers just go, "It's not us, you know, it's okay, just ignore it." No, it's, you know, and really, I say this, I mean, I'm sitting here at the moment, I own 100 acres of farmland. I'm in an area of dairy farming here. I'm not anti-farm at all, and I eat yogurt, I drink milk, I eat beef. But let's admit that the emissions are a problem, and let's see what we can do to reduce them.
Well, it's very complicated. In my conversation with Frank Mittlerner from UC Davis, he said that, you know, a cow that eats grass in the grasslands, the methane that they produce while eating that grass has a higher density than when they're in the feedlot and they're eating grains that are easier for them to digest because those foods are designed to fatten them up. That's a whole other conversation, but it makes it very difficult to know exactly how we move forward so that we can be paying attention to all of these elements in a way that's paying attention to our impact on climate.
No, I agree with that. And but I would step back. I don't entirely agree with his characterization of there. There are studies which say that. There are many studies which say otherwise. It's a reasonably small literature, a relatively small number of investigators working on it. They don't tend to cite one another's work. I think we need a lot more people working in that area with some more transparency, if you will. But I'm sure that the details matter. And I'm sure that if we focus on it, we can figure out how to reduce the emissions at least some. And this whole idea of seaweed as a feed, there are several studies suggesting that can greatly lower them. Maybe there's some problem with that. I don't know. Let's look at it more closely. Some people suggest using antibiotics because that'll affect the bacteria that are producing the methane. I hate the idea of routinely, prophylactically feeding anything antibiotics. I'm not a big fan of that. But the details do matter in terms of that microenvironment in which those bacteria live. And I think we need more research in that and more openness from the farm farming community is what we might do with that information.
I think, though, what you said about us focusing in on this and doing the work and putting collective efforts towards addressing these issues will ensure that we're moving in a direction where we're determined to try and have better outcomes. And we have to keep our eye on that objective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, my personal view is that if you look at the number one source of methane increases globally, it is the oil and gas industry. And I'm a firm believer that we should be moving to a 100% renewable economy, fossil fuel free, and we can do that fairly quickly. I'm a big, big believer in that. That'll be a huge help.
Yes, I agree. Thank you very much for taking the time to join me for this episode of Conversations That Matter.
Thank you for your interest. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.